chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped but it's no hype. From this height it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys bookmark us here on UCY and come back and listen to us Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. LeVon's on our Friday show, and then all the other awesome hosts that are on UCY every day of the week, most of the day. Check them out and support independent media, because that's what it's all about. I'm also joined here in the studio with my co-host, DB Schwartz. How are you doing tonight, man?
Doing well, doing well. Just another Wednesday. Happy hump day, everybody. Hope everybody's been following with, I guess, like not a heavy heart, because I think finally Israel's kind of realizing that the PC nightmare they created is not going to allow them to continue to just ruthlessly bombard a population that has really no means to even escape, let alone fight back. And yeah, there's guys in Hamas that are in there and they're launching rockets, but the IDF's got some of the best special forces in the world. So I guess the question remains, like, how do you get the civilians out and how do you basically take Hamas out without all this indiscriminate killing going on?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the main concern, man, because, you know, a few things to think about the situations for the Palestinians, because it's not like it's some kind of equal army and equal situation where these guys have access to all these high-tech weapons, that people have access to great food, great services, a bunch of foreign aid. No, unfortunately, that's not the case for the average Palestinian. These guys they're blockaded, okay? They have no access to any of the stuff that you and me have access to. They get a rationed amount of food that goes in that's counted by the calorie, okay? So they count their food by the calorie. So, I mean, if you're a Palestinian and you want to indulge in some a Snickers bar or some kind of candy or something like that, guess what? You're probably not going to be able to do that unless you make it at home. And unless you grow it on your own, and there's no room in Gaza, it's the most one of the most densely populated places in the world. There's hardly any room to grow food on the ground unless you got a rooftop garden. I mean, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
I mean, your food is controlled by the people that are oppressing you, and the whole world sits by and basically lets it happen.
It's just something's been started here where there's no real way, there's no out. What do you do with 1.8 million people crammed into 45 miles of land? Which is not a lot. We're talking about 45 square miles of land, I believe. I'm not sure what the exact square footage was. But, yeah, there's just nothing you can do with these people. Are you going to integrate them into Israeli society? Are you going to give them a second state? Can a second state even exist if it's disarmed, which Israel will insist upon? Because the entire purpose of kind of developing a second state would be to allow them to have some kind of armed forces and some kind of security apparatus to basically nullify Hamas. So they couldn't even do that under the pretty much agreement Israel has cooked up. And they want all of Jerusalem, which of course is holy to Christianity as well as Islam. So it's just a nightmare. It's a nightmare scenario because it's not like Israel's going anywhere and their military is just overpowering. I mean, I don't see any, I don't think if all of the countries all over there ganged up on them, they still might not win.
Yeah, isn't that what happened in the Six-Day War?
Yep.
Right? And it was like Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon.
They didn't have Turkey, though.
All these guys, you know, they all tried, and it's not going to happen, because guess what? Israel's propped up by the U.S. and the British and the other Western powers, so they're never going to be completely invaded and wiped, like they say, and how they say Iran is planning on wiping Israel off the map. That'd be foolish, because if they wiped Israel off the map, guess what? They'd be wiping out their own holy sites, too, and they'd be wiping out the Palestinians, too.
Which ISIS seems just fine with doing. I don't know if you've seen how many holy sites ISIS has destroyed. And maybe that really should shift back into the top topic, because now that this bombardment's at least in a ceasefire, we're seeing barbarity we haven't seen out of an army, if you can even call them that, probably since what the Japanese were doing to our guys in World War II, when I mean just pure barbarity. No regards for life at all. Women, children, elderly, everyone's fair game. Random people being shot, that's fair game too, because that creates chaos. And it begs the question, why is this giant Islamic army not getting itself involved in the Israeli-Palestine conflict? That's something to question, and it really, it should make people question who's funding them and who controls them if they're not attacking Israel right now.
Yeah, that's a good question, man. And I've seen a lot of speculation. Now, we do know a few things about ISIS, or so they're being called now, IS. They're just being called IS, right? We know a few things. We know that they were part of these Syrian rebels at first. They received training and possibly weapons and financing from the U.S. via the funding that we sent over to the Syrian rebels. So that's one thing that we need to definitely keep in mind. We got to remember that these guys came from the very same beginnings that Al-Qaeda came from. And they formerly were a piece of Al-Qaeda. We know Al-Qaeda was manufactured by the CIA, just like how Hamas was manufactured by the Israelis. It seems like we have a bad, horrible, in fact, track record of manufacturing these horrible groups, hoping to achieve a certain geopolitical goal, and then in the end, it either purposely or not, it ends up backfiring on us. Is it just to just keep the wheels of the military-industrial complex spinning, or are our diplomats just that stupid that they end up having their plans basically backfire every single time?
Right.
Now, I mean, I don't think that the country is run by idiots. They may be very ignorant, and they may be very overconfident, but I don't think they're idiots by any means. Even Joe Biden, okay? I don't think the guy's an idiot. I mean, he's the same guy that basically wrote the Patriot Act, okay? So he may be a terrible person, but I don't think he's that dumb. So I don't know if I can believe that Al-Qaeda and ISIS and Hamas are just foreign policy blunders where they created these groups that, and they were supposed to be counterbalances to these other groups. Or did they create these people with the intent of them having to go back later and fight them over and over again? Because if you look from the perspective of the military-industrial complex, I mean, that makes better business sense. If you can create a perpetual enemy, if you can create an enemy forever, if you could have a perpetual war, guess what? You're going to be making a ton of money. All of the taxpayers are going to be losing their asses, going bankrupt, getting their money deflated or inflated. But the guys at the military-industrial complex and Wall Street, because Wall Street are the ones that finance the government pays military-industrial complex, and then they leverage it all off of our taxpayer backs. You know, so all of those groups are getting rich. All the politicians that are getting paid off, the banks that are loaning the money to the government, the Fed is complicit because the Fed is run by all the banks. So, I mean, all these policies are kind of I don't think they're a coincidence. I think they're all being worked together, and it's military-industrial complex. I mean, think of it. We got warned back in the 50s about it, and we never took the time to actually reel it in.
Right.
And anyone that did try, like, for instance, JFK maybe, guess what? Sorry, bro. You know, you want to mess with the Fed? You want to not go into Vietnam? Well, sorry, dude. We're going to have to take care of you.
Yeah. I mean, JFK was the last president for the people who actually believed in a doctrine of freedom. Freedom of destiny more than anything. He wanted to attach the gold standard back to the U.S. dollar, which had made us an imperial powerhouse, further caused by World War II, because after that, man, we had physically acquired all of the gold. We took the gold of the world, and we could back it. And we, not only that, we had a military that would mud stomp you if you did anything to get in our way. I mean, the Vietnam War was a perfect example. Here's the biggest problem, though. The United States is only one country, and it wants to control the whole damn world through technology, which, let's face it, there's a limit. If there wasn't, we wouldn't be human beings. We would be robots right now. Obviously, there's a limit to technology. Probably in the past, there were civilizations that had better technology than we have now, and they killed everyone. They destroyed themselves in a big world war or whatever. This is the sixth age of man. I recommend reading about basically all of the artifacts that have been found pointing to a technology level at least as good as this, if not better, that predates us by hundreds of thousands of years. I'm talking about precision machinery and even microchips that are 200,000 years old. And you ask yourself, why did this, how could this be? Or have I been lied to my whole life? Yes. Okay, the control grid's coming down, and that's the beautiful thing about being alive now, is the internet ruined it all. So enjoy this big influx of information and realize this technology's not enough for what they want to do. They want to control it all, but they don't have enough people anymore because now the people are turning on them, and they're starting to realize, oh, crap, we actually do need people. They don't have robots yet, and we're in that perfect storm right now to be able to pretty much dictate the future if we don't let these guys drag us into a war.
Yeah, man. I mean, we're at the turning point, really. And I think we talk about this pretty often, man. And we're at the crossroads here where we can either let these oligarchs control the technology and they're going to use it to really basically enslave us all, or we make the move towards decentralization of the technology, open source, you know, Creative Commons. And the technology basically frees a lot of us, and it pulls a lot of people out of poverty. It pulls a lot of people out of having to support places like Walmart because we could just 3D print this plastic crap instead. And we could use hemp plastic, or we can just feed it with recycled bottles and do it that way. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many different things we could do to get away from this, you know. And we also talk about it so often, about getting away from the power grid, and I think that's such an important point to make, and that's why we always get back to it. Because with that, we can break away from this whole control grid that has become what the U.S. Now is. You know, we fight in all these wars to prop up the dollar, secure the resources, and I think Africa is a perfect example of the foreign policy that we're implementing. Now, we all know that life in Africa is horrible, it sucks, and people are dying from a bunch of illnesses. I mean, how many people die from just diarrhea in Africa? I mean, thousands and hundreds of thousands of people die from
malaria. Think about it. People are dying from mosquitoes. I mean, and could that be prevented? Yes, with mosquito netting it could be prevented. Yeah, man, it's a cradle of life, and it's never been tamed, and it's probably not going to be, and perfect segue into really what should be the most important single topic of any news station, which is Ebola. I mean, I'm sitting here reading about pretty much what people are doing, full lockdown, full panic mode with Ebola, because why? Well, for the first time ever in the history of our country, we've purposely brought back people. Why? Because of ZMapp. We believe that now our technological prowess has made us not only a perfect testbed and profit market for these pharmaceutical wonder drugs coming out, which pretty much tailor make themselves to the virus and kill it. But it's an undue risk. I mean, you can do the exact same thing over in Africa. They don't really mind. I think at this point we understand that our government is criminally insane because it's full of criminals and insane people. And they don't really care if it gets out and a lot of people pay the price ultimately with their lives, because in the long scheme of things, 15, 20, 30,000 dead here is better than 15, 20, 30 million people dead if China or Russia or some other country decides to weaponize Ebola and send it over. And that's going to be their thing. It's like the human shield argument. Well, they're hiding in a hospital, so we have to bomb everything around it and kill everyone around there. Sure, cool. Now everyone that saw that hates you for life, and you've created an immense blowback. Nature's similar. If you create a vaccine, it mutates. The only reason that there's not pandemics going on is because of hygiene, cleanliness, and pretty much our ability to make where we live inhospitable to bacteria and viruses. It's vaccine is health on a lowest common denominator scale. It's all it is. It's the Walmart of health. So when they say Ebola could break out and we have a vaccine, don't worry. Worry.
Yeah, man. And you know, let's face it. The government has no real interest in stopping an Ebola outbreak anyway. At least not at first. Because the only thing that an Ebola outbreak is going to do is just send people running into the arms of the government. Just like any other time when there's a panic, any other time that there's some kind of scare going on. Just like after 9/11, everyone, oh man, there's terrorists everywhere, they're going to hijack plane. Yeah, go ahead and pass the Patriot Act. That'll save us, that'll protect. Well, no, unfortunately, they haven't. The TSA hasn't stopped a single terrorist.
No, they've never caught one.
The FBI has stopped terrorists, but unfortunately, they've manufactured all of those.
Exactly.
Terrorists.
I don't think the underwear bomber had an underwear bomb. I mean, I think he kind of got pretty much pushed into that. Maybe he wanted to do it. Maybe he even went so far as to ask somebody how to do it, and then they facilitated him with it to create the panic. But man, it's classic effect and reaction. It's been used so many times. And really the granddaddy of it would be biological warfare. We could say, oh, we've been hit by Russia and we're about to go to war because they just sent Ebola over and killed 20 million Americans. By the way, those 20 million will probably be on some kind of blacklist anyway. And then you'll have 280 million sheeple that'll go to war, no problem. So you can start to see, read a national security textbook on a college level and you'll see they've been already biologically warfare against particular demographics within our own country. As part of, again, everything goes back to the Iron Mountain Report. Getting rid of particular demographics within our country through covert biological warfare. Or, you know what they say, like, silent weapons for silent wars.
Yeah, and we talked about this on Monday. And if you guys ever want to listen to any of our old shows, you could go back into the archives, which are there on the upper right-hand side of the homepage there where you guys are at. And you can listen to our last week's show or any week before that. But we talked about the possibility. Now, I don't want to sit here and say, yeah, that's what it is. But I'm not going to put the possibility out that it could be a genetically modified superbug or a virus, you know, that can do things that it normally wouldn't do. Now, I found some information this morning that there has been a strain of Ebola in the past. This happened in the 80s. And it was in monkeys. It wasn't transmittable to humans, but it was a strain of Ebola that infected monkeys, and it actually did go airborne in a facility where they held a bunch of monkeys that they were doing testing on, and the Ebola virus went airborne in that facility. So I don't want to put that out of the grasp either. But at the same time, I want to air out my personal opinion is on this Ebola thing. And my personal opinion is that it's all just scaremongering. I don't think that it's that huge of a thing. They're saying now that maybe 1,000 people have died from it, which is a lot, and I'm not saying that that's not horrible. But you gotta think, the continent of Africa has 1 billion people. for 1,000 to die, it's not really the biggest thing in the world. It's not on an epidemic scale yet, you know. So in the end, I think that it's better to just keep a cool head on this thing, and just as long as you got good hygiene, then you're going to be okay. As long as you're not letting someone sneeze on you that's got Ebola, you're going to be all right for now. Now, if there is a development where this thing goes airborne, then I think that's a whole nother discussion, and then it'll be time to talk about some real preparations and to take some real precaution out in public and to really get to the root of how or why this thing is happening.
Yeah, it's happening on... I love to say, like, just read Operation Paperclip. I've read the entire novel. I mean, everything always goes back to World War II because somebody won the last really, really real world war there was, and they control it all. They control all the resources. But the problem is that they had to lie to everybody in order to sell it. They had to lie to make people think that we had won the war, but we really hadn't won the war. We really absorbed all of these guys in, man, and they control it all. They control everything of importance within our country, and thus they control the whole world. And I think maybe as far as 2 decades back, people realized these people were still there and still in control, and their predecessors are still in control. I mean, for God's sakes, Kissinger's still running things. The guy's retired officially.
Why won't he just die?
But him and Brzezinski, I mean, they're the chess masters, and they're just the ones we see. So the whole World War II dialect of the world, imperialism, it's on its last gasping breath because these guys are on their last gasping breaths. And none of, even their forebears don't want the system anymore. We don't want a perpetual war to reduce population. There's much more effect. Not to subjugate the human race, but to control it. I understand we need a control grid. We got limited resources until we go interstellar. That's the whole goal, eventually. That's 50 years away, maybe, before we make a generation chip. In the meantime, consumer-based, resource-based economy, where we got to have enough supply being sustainable. And the new generation knows that. We don't need these wars of conquest for what means. Who cares if a bunch of ex-Nazis run the world? Fuck those guys. It's going to be multicultural, multinational. We're going to all come together and we're going to get off this planet together. There's not going to be one supergroup because we can't trust them. Everybody's got to have a voice, and that's the real future.
And we don't need all the... I mean, we talk about this whole consumerism thing and how we're eating up all these resources, but we don't have to. I mean, if we just legalized hemp, I mean, that would solve a lot of the deforestation problems and stuff like that. And if we just changed up some of the ways that we do agriculture, we wouldn't be destroying the rainforest, and we wouldn't be making the ocean acidic and all that, all these things that these people are doing. And we wouldn't have to be doing all this pollution with all this fossil fuel if the government and their corporation handlers weren't suppressing all the technology that's been should have been around for a long time now. I mean, if it weren't for the government and the corporations suppressing technology, I have no doubt that almost the whole world right now would have basically free electricity, which would basically mean that poverty would be completely gone, you know, because everyone would be able to grow their own food and have enough water, because with electricity you can either clean water or you can create water by condensing it out of thin air. And it kind of all goes back to this corporate stranglehold. And I kind of want to jump into this thing in Africa because it does tie in not only with the corporate thing, it ties in with the foreign policy, and it ties in with Ebola. Because I posted this in the chat a few minutes ago from Zero Hedge, and it's a cool graphic. It's an awesome graphic. It's a horrible graphic, but it's really telling. And it shows that the U.S. is involved militarily with over at least 20 different nations in Africa. And first of all, think about the exposure that our people over there, that's where a lot of our people can possibly catch Ebola.
Yeah.
And they might not know it, and they come back, and they come back on leave, and then they give it to their family, and then boom. Okay, now that's one problem. The other problem is all the money that we're spending over there, propping up these governments, and we're not solving any of their damn problems with the poor and with all the diseases and stuff going on. We're just supplying the warlords with a bunch of either military weapons or a bunch of food and aid, which they in turn militarize and weaponize. And these guys weaponize the food, and the warlords get a hold of it, the dictators get a hold of it, and they turn it against us. Now, yeah. One of our listeners, was it Road Dogging, or Road Dodging, he posted something that's really pretty true, I think, because he was saying that in the chat room there about how China and the U.S. are kind of turning Africa into a big proxy war. Mm-hmm. Because we all know that China's going in there and securing resources and all that stuff. Now, China's doing it, I think, in a less bad way than we are, because they're not really going in and supplying all these weapons and stuff. They're more or less building infrastructure, gaining access to the resources and making partnerships and stuff like that. Now, we're going in there and weaponizing these people and supplying them with arms, just like we do with all the other groups in the world that we, quote-unquote, give diplomacy to and foreign aid. I mean, that's basically what we do. We give them weapons, whether it's physically or whether it's through the food or the water or whatever it is. And now, we got all these military guys in Africa. Now, we got all these corporations over there exploiting the situation. We just did an article on theantimedia.org about how Shell basically destroyed the Nigerian River Delta over there in Nigeria. And this was almost 30 years ago. And this whole delta is completely destroyed because of what these guys did. And they were extracting oil over there. And there's 10 villages now that just don't have clean water. I mean, there's basically a permanent oil slick over top of this river.
Right. I saw that. And they were using some very rudimentary ways of doing evaporative water collection. I mean, these ways take all day to make enough for a drink, but at least you're not going to die of dehydration. So it's just in a nutshell what we have to look forward to, even in our country. I don't know if you saw recently, but Toledo, which in its greater areas is home to about 400,000 people, they indeed had an environmental catastrophe that destroyed their ability to get clean water. This is a city on a Great Lake. And they still had a problem with water. If you don't have a solar-powered water evaporative unit, you're at the whim of whoever's cleaning your water because you can't really create it yourself. So I would say for $1,500 or $2,000 to make sure you can have a gallon of clean, fresh, 100% pure water every single day, too, if you get enough sun, that it's worth it, and it's going to pay for itself easily. And these are things that as society we can start to demand. When I look at what we pay in tax, and I see the widespread chaos we cause around the world, I realize that we could divert that to making our own country self-sustainable. We'd never go to war again. Ever. The only thing we don't really have in abundance is heavy metals, which China has. They'd be happy to trade us for food. Provided it wasn't this GMO sludge.
Yeah. So they've already rejected how many tons of GMO stuff?
I don't know.
Enormous amount.
It was four massive, massive shipments. Okay, they don't want it because it's a risk. Every country in the world but ours knows it's a risk. Our country knows it's a risk. But because we allow lobbying and we allow the privatization of basically anything, we can pass this crap out. And honestly, when we get this skyrocketing, I mean, let's put it this way. There's no other country in the world where there's 50% cancer rate. Name one. Research it. Is there anyone even over 40% in the whole world? You got GMOs. You got radioactive everything all around us. You got Wi-Fi. You got everything. So the correlations will come and, you know, the best thing about this country is the freedom. The worst thing about this country is the crony capitalism. We got to kill that out.
Yeah, and it's only free under certain conditions. You know, as long as you follow these certain conditions, then yeah, it's free. You know, but if you make a mistake, like yesterday, I was I got pulled over by a cop because somebody bumped into my car a few months ago and knocked out my taillight. And I put tape over it and painted it red and all that stuff. I just didn't have the money to fix it yet because the insurance on it is like a $500 deductible, which just doesn't make sense because it's only like a $300 repair. Either way, I just couldn't afford it. And, you know, I get pulled over yesterday and I get a ticket for it, you know, and it's like someone did it to me, didn't pay for it. I don't got the money to pay for it. I didn't commit a crime, really. But at the same time, I got pulled over. I got detained by this cop for a while where he wrote me a ticket. And now I got to go spend the money to fix this thing, money I don't really have. And I got to go waste a whole day in court to go show the court that, oh, yeah, I fixed this light. Here it is. You want to look at it? You know, it's just like... It's like you're free only as long as you follow these rules, man. And unfortunately, especially here in the U.S., we have so many damn rules that now we've got the biggest prison population in the history of mankind. And that's another place we're sinking in a bunch of money that we don't need to be. What we need to be doing is spending the money instead of housing these people and putting them in cages like animals. I don't even think animals should be in cages, let alone humans. Instead of doing that, we should be doing what Portugal does, which is... give these people rehabilitation. Okay, you're addicted to meth, you're addicted to heroin. Okay, here's some rehab. Here's some therapy. Let us help you get off these drugs if you want to. Not, hey, we're going to throw you in a cage for a couple years where you're just going to become even a harsher criminal and get a bunch of connections where you get out of jail and you could actually do some real crime. We're thinking about things the opposite way. Just like this foreign policy with Africa, we're just sending them arms and sending in military guys, and you got these UN quote-unquote peacekeepers. And we're just doing more harm than good, just like almost all of our foreign policy. Now look at what we've done to Iraq. They got like 40,000, the Islamic State now has like 40,000 people trapped on a mountain in Iraq. And dozens of children have already died. All the elderly people are starting to die off because these people are trapped without any water. They don't have any water. And the Iraqi Air Force is trying to airlift water into them, but they're just not able to get enough in there. And the ISIS, formerly known as ISIS, has these people surrounded on this mountain. So they got two choices. Either try to brave the... brave ISIS and try to climb down that mountain and break through their barricade, they have it surrounded. Or sit back and wait for the Iraqi government to airdrop water to you. And I would not trust the Iraqi government to... I wouldn't rely on my life. I wouldn't rely on the Iraqi government for my life. Because look what they've already done. They've just failed their entire country and they allowed for this ISIS thing to take over. But right. When you look back at it, no matter how bad of a guy Saddam Hussein was, when Saddam was in power, the average Iraqi was in a better situation than they are now. And so that being said, the blame for these 40,000 people, if they die, it squarely lies on our shoulders. We paid for that. Anybody that's an American taxpayer paid for that to happen, even if you didn't want to. Even if you thought it was a bad idea... every time you go to the store, every time you go to work and get a paycheck, you're paying for that crap.
There's a reason why ISIS is not attacking Israel. They're not attacking Turkey. They're armed by us. They're meant to format, well, let's face it, division in Syria, first and foremost. They were pretty much supposed to bolster the rebels. And they're kind of like these mad dogs that even Al-Qaeda supposedly had booted out. Like, these were pretty much the most psychopathic dudes, and they had to create their own Levant kind of propaganda to get behind to formulate some kind of an alliance, because the Predator drones were wiping these dudes out. Now they're too big. We armed them, which is the most insane thing. We were killing them a year ago. Now we're arming them because maybe they can crack through Syria and Assad, but that's so far gone as far as a conclusion. They're so bolstered by Putin right now that they're uncrackable. And now with Iran throwing in their own special forces guys, it's not going to happen. We're seeing ISIS as this Hydra head of this sinking ship of these old Kabbalists that are the NWO faction. And they're going to go down, man. The problem is, are they going to take what until, I don't know, 50 years ago was the greatest freaking republic that had ever existed ever? A country that had unlimited farmland, a can-do attitude, and money backed by gold.
And an awesome manufacturing economy.
You couldn't beat us. The only thing we didn't have was people. Now we have all the people in the world to make every job in the world hum, and we're hindered by this faction within our own government that works with other factions and other governments. Probably you can throw the IDF's part in there with Mossad. And they make things around the world happen that the rest of the world hates, and we should too, because it ruins quality of life, kills people, and ultimately keeps us subjugated. Why are we not in flying cars? Why don't we have bases in other planets? Blah, 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 blah. We'll talk about it every day. It's the truth, though. These factions of dudes that had already tried and lost in World War II just keep going and won't stop.
Their thirst for power is everlasting, basically. They can never fill this hole in their souls. And I think we see it on a micro scale with probably a lot of people listening, and I know I see every day in real life. There's some people that just have an empty soul, and they just got to keep filling it with more and more stuff, more and more popularity, more and more power, more and more money, whatever it is. Unfortunately, these idiots at the top have a thirst for power, and them filling that hole in their soul, unfortunately, bankrupts the rest of us and kills a bunch of people. And, you know, this is the problem that we're facing right now, is this thirst for power, man, and people can't just be happy with living a normal life and having a nice, decent life. They gotta have this crazy, insane, monopolistic, violent way of living where they're willing to kill how many millions of Iraqis, how many thousands and thousands of Palestinians, how many thousands of Afghanis, Vietnamese, Koreans, people in Africa and all these other countries, Mexico, South America, Central America, all the military coups that we've backed over there, just to keep propping up this power grab. I mean, it's mind-blowing, and the fact that so many people are still kind of hypnotized by the propaganda, whether it's on TV or online or whatever, I mean, it's just almost like sometimes it's discouraging, but then sometimes, like when we were able to stop the full-on bombing and invasion of Syria, mm-hmm. we get really encouraged.
Yes.
And other times it's really discouraging to see so many sheeple go and start blaming this whole problem on illegal aliens and people coming up across the border. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Even calling people illegal aliens is dehumanizing.
It is.
It makes you think, oh, well, they're not. Maybe they're subhuman, you know.
So put your shoe on the other foot. Why don't you understand what immigration really does to an economy? Immigration, unless it's completely open floodgates, like a refugee situation, it's going to spur the economy, okay? It's proven time and again. We were, before this current immigration wave, at risk for being in a free fall as far as our population goes, which would mean that we would be relegated to a secondary world power economically within 30 years.
You want to know what an economy with a deflated population looks like? Look at Japan.
Yes, and look at China. Look at China's one-child policy and what is it doing to them. They have 100 million men between 18 and 35 with no female between 18 and 35. What would that do to a country? To have 100 million men with no wife? Well, what it's done is sex tourism and wife tourism and people grouping together and buying property all around the world and moving there. I mean, what you're seeing right now is pretty much whoever can afford it in China is leaving because the environment's so polluted there they can't grow enough food for their population. And that's another problem. So social experimentation doesn't work. What always works is rewarding people for doing the right thing. and I love to say this, we're not overpopulated. We're crammed in these big, giant megacities when we should all be making micro farms work, when we should all be spread around urban centers like Venus Project, when we should have electronic ways of getting around and zero pollution mass transit. I mean,
decentralize, decentralize, decentralize in every aspect of everything, right? I mean, it's kind of hard for me to name one thing that would really benefit from a highly centralized organization. Almost everything works better when it's decentralized. Now look at the March Against Monsanto. Perfect example. Every city and every town that had a March Against Monsanto and has a March Against Monsanto group is autonomous, and they do their own thing. They participate in their own festivals. They go to the marches. They go to the, what are those things called when they, on holidays, when they do the thing down the street? Skipping my mind right now. You know, when they have floats and all that stuff, whatever it's called. It's not quite a march.
Parade.
But yeah, a parade. There we go. Okay. I mean, all these autonomous groups, every town has its own parade for its own special reason at a on a certain day and all this stuff. And that's the huge benefit, is these groups can evolve to fit their own local community. And it's not like the main March Against Monsanto group is dictating to all these people, hey, you have to do this, you have to do that. We're going to decide who runs your thing. We're going to decide how much resources you get. We're going to decide what kind of marketing you're going to have, what kind of promotions, and all that stuff. It's all decentralized, man. And it's a perfect example of why we need to, I think, get out of these cities. Slowly, we got to start making the move and get out of these centralized locations so much. Because one, we don't need it as much anymore because we have all the communication in the world. We got Skype, we got FaceTime, we got all the other things, text messaging.
There's free transportation. I just saw a design that another guy had invented yesterday, which was a carport where you set it up that had solar panels and it was built-in inverter, and you plugged an electric motored bike into it that had a range of 40 miles, and it was done in an hour. You come home, plug it in, it'll give you another 40 miles an hour later. Nobody needs a car for their commute. You don't need a car at all. You don't. You can get away without having a car. I mean, yeah, people go, well, we can't go on a vacation or blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you can. You don't need to have these things anymore. Like, you don't need to have a big house.
I mean, you can have all that stuff.
Sure, but you don't have to.
But, I mean, if you're going to try to be in the center of the city, you're definitely not going to be able to afford it pretty soon here because of the inflation rates. And I just saw housing costs went up, or housing prices to buy a home went up like another 7% this year, June over June. Last year it went up like 12%. I mean, you got skyrocketing inflation in the
fake
housing
bubble.
Market. Yeah, and there really aren't that many private, you know, buyers out there. Most of the buyers out there right now are investment firms.
Yep.
And people that are trying to flip homes and stuff like that. The average guy that's out there, the average family that's going out to buy a house and stuff like that, it's not any higher now than it was a couple years ago when the housing situation was looking a lot worse. Now, the housing situation hasn't really gotten better. It's just the bubble has gotten reinflated, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, housing is fixed and all this stuff. Well, no, not really. If you look at the construction rates and stuff, they're still pretty low. So the demand really isn't there.
Right.
You know, and you can go and get a place in the country where you can go off-grid for pretty damn cheap. You know, and if we think about the whole theme of decentralizing and open source, sustainability and stuff like that, then I think it does make sense for people to start getting, you know, slowly moving away from the cities, and then you're not so reliant like we are here in San Diego on water getting piped in from the Colorado River and hoping that they're going to keep pumping that water, because one day if this drought continues or whatever, I mean, if this drought gets bad enough, that water may get severely limited. Yeah. Now there already is, they just signed another state law that basically says, hey, you can't water your lawn between any time during the day. Like, you can't water between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m. or something
right.
like that. So I mean, it's already illegal. Like, if we get caught watering our lawn, and you got a neighbor that's a snitch, and you got a neighbor that's like a busybody, and they say they can call the cops on you or call the water authority and say, "Hey, my neighbor at this address is watering their lawn during the day," and then they come slap you with a $500 ticket.
Right.
And they even have in LA, they have cops going around.
Yeah.
They've got a team of like 5 cops going around, policing the like, people's front yards to make sure they're not watering, and making sure their sprinklers aren't on and stuff.
Right.
Now, yeah, in a way, we need to conserve. But I mean, do we really need to have police coming down and telling us to do that? If we get put in that situation, that should be kind of a wake up call, saying, "Hey, damn, maybe considering the insecurity of our water, and considering that water is basically one of the most important things that you need to survive." Maybe we should think about getting into a place where we're not so damn reliant on the government piping water in for us, because that's a pretty bad idea. We all know the government is inefficient at doing things. And when we put our water, our electricity, and our food system in the hands of the government, I mean, that's kind of a scary idea, and that's not something that I really want to see happen, and to see something bad happen, like another housing crisis, or worse, we see something more like a depression. Or when the dollar, when our sanctions push Russia away from the dollar, and they full on just say, "Screw it, we're not doing dollar anymore," and they start dealing with China and all these other guys in their own currencies, we could have that situation, man. And that's not a situation that we want to be in. So I think it is better that we either secure your water supply somehow or another, or get out of a situation where you have an insecure water supply. And I'm one of those people right now that has an insecure water supply. We live here in San Diego. We're close to the coast. There's no such thing as having a well around here.
No.
It's way too damn polluted. Nobody has wells around. In fact, I think it's actually illegal to have a well down here. So that's out of the question. I got some family that lives out in the country where I'm thinking maybe if something went down, I would have to go to them to get my water.
Right.
You know, because they're in areas where houses around them have wells and stuff.
Right. I mean, it should be pretty apparent what the plan is with Agenda 21 when they push more and more people into these urban, basically, for back of a letter word, they're concentrations. I'm not going to say they're a camp. You can leave anytime you want. We're not at the point yet where we're treating our regular Joes, like the people that are coming up from Central America yet, where they're throwing them into these FEMA camps. And I don't know if you saw this, Nick, but there was a guy who recently filmed a FEMA camp, and they pretty much told him if he didn't give up his equipment, they were going to throw him in jail. But while he was filming, it was uploading, so it made it to his Dropbox anyway.
Who was that?
And he posted it. There's a guy online right now who has pretty much he went around the periphery of a FEMA camp, a real legitimate FEMA camp. They took his camera, but it was uploading. He had a Wi-Fi camera, so at the same time it was already going. So it was good to go. So they're ready to go, man. They're ready to crank. They're designed for 30 million Americans. They anticipate 10% of the United States will never submit to a constitutionally free American corporation. That's what we are. We are a plantation to the elites, the sons and daughters of the banking cartels. Okay, they own us. They own the country with a title, and they want to trade on it. The collateral are the people. So you and all your children, if you have a Social Security number, that's your bank note. If you have a birth certificate, that's your collateral note. They trade you. They expect you to live to 78.5 years with your cancer. They expect you to pay $300,000 a year to the medical insurance scam because you're going to get cancer. It's all formulated into a big algorithm, and it's been traded on, okay? China traded all of their gold for all of our labor collateral for the last 60 years, stopping on supposedly September 12th, 2001. Does that make any sense to anybody? They were calling in their debt. Do you understand now why the World Trade Centers fell? So that we wouldn't have to pay our debt? That's all it was. So if anybody doesn't understand why we're always going to be at war forever, it's because if we don't stay at war, we have to pay China back. And the elites are not going to give up their Maseratis, mansions, yachts, and all that other shit for you. They're not going to do it. They don't give a fuck what happens to you. And that's the whole world in a nutshell.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think we all have our own theories on the whole 9/11 thing, especially, you know. It's a very controversial subject. There is some new documents coming out now, which I'm assuming are going to be, you know, you heard about it, what's his name, Representative Macy has his hands on it, and it's like a 15-20 page document with some stuff about 9/11 that these guys in Congress are claiming is going to really kind of change the whole fabric of what the mainstream view of 9/11 really is right now. So who knows what it is that's going to come out. But there's one thing that I can tell you for sure. If this stuff is finally coming out now, that tells you one thing. It's a cover-up. Whether of the most minor form where they just wanted to shield a couple of high-class Saudis from having any kind of implication because one of them was one of their grandsons or something. Whether it's something that minor or whether it leads us down to this path where we see that it was something which a lot of people think, which is it was a false flag.
Well, it served so many purposes and it had so many perpetrators. There were members of the Saudi royal family. There were Mossad. There were Operation Paperclip. There were people within our banking cartel, the British banking cartel, and our information services and the MI6. It goes into the millions of conspirators, but guess what? There's 7 billion people. And I don't care how powerful 1 million people are and how many Breberts and how many other people they're going to silence by killing, it doesn't matter anymore. This era of humanity is over. We're just basically sweeping out the trash right now. That's our jobs. As people that pretty much are aware, people that have the consciousness that is necessary to see through this bullshit, we're the trash men. That's our job. We're sweeping these people out.
We need to, now here's the thing, is that you can sweep, we can arrest all the dudes on Wall Street tomorrow, all the dudes that are in charge of the Fed, all the politicians that have sold us out and got us into these illegal wars. But without making a renewed base of ideas.
Yes. They'll take the power.
Nothing would change. Because yeah, if you look at any revolution basically that's happened in recent times, I mean, look at Egypt. They've had 2 revolutions in what, that many years? 3 years? Mm-hmm.
Look at Libya.
With the same basic ideas and the same structure coming out on both ends of the revolution, guess what? The end product is going to be roughly the same thing. And what did they have right after they had Mubarak? They had Muslim Brotherhood, which are just as oppressive, right? And now it's the Egyptian military basically that runs the show. And who is the Egyptian military? They're another U.S. proxy. Now here's one thing I wanted to get to before we end the show. I mean, we still got some time here. If there's anything you guys want us to touch on, just mention it down in the chat. But I saw a couple articles today that were basically suggesting that these sanctions on Russia are going to backfire, and that I briefly mentioned it earlier, but it's going to drive Russia, which we got to remember is a huge player in resources, and they're a huge player militarily, as far as economically, selling weapons, they're only second biggest to us. All these sanctions that we're doing with them are probably just going to push these guys more quickly away from a full-on policy of no more U.S. dollar. And if Russia goes, if they have their way in Ukraine, Ukraine's going to go with them.
Yep.
And
France is
Iran German. Is probably going to go with them.
Yeah.
China eventually will go with them. Either that or China does their own thing,
right,
with their own currency. But we got to remember that sanctions are basically waging war, and we can't take these things lightly. We're putting these sanctions on Russia, and the blowback that we're going to get from it is going to be, all it's going to be is an expedited fall of the U.S. dollar.
Right.
From maybe not a total collapse, but at least from reserve status, from the global reserve currency that it is now, backed by not gold or silver, but backed by steel and gunpowder. All we're doing against Russia right now with all this proxy war in Ukraine and all these sanctions and all this stuff in Syria, we're just expediting the fall of the dollar, which is either going to end in a bad situation like a shitload of war and possibly World War III, or it ends with people, when the thing does come down and people just said, okay, that was a bad idea, let's start something new.
What if everybody in the U.S. just pretty much stormed all of their so-called representation establishments, like city halls, and pretty much took the cash out of their wallets and threw it on the ground and stepped on it, like at the end of Zeitgeist by Peter Joseph. And they said, we're not going to work for this fiat anymore. We want assets. We're tired of living under a fiat banking hegemony that keeps threatening us with a militarized police force, who, by the way, if they continue to do what they're doing, they should kiss them and their families' futures in our country behind, because they won't be welcome here at all. If you commit genocide or an assault on your own people, you can be sure that we'll know who you are. So I always like to tell people that are friends with cops, man, you should let them know they should pick the right side. 300 million versus 1 million doesn't sound very good. Not at all. There's probably a million people in the U.S. right now that are part of the problem, and 300 million people are against them. How do you like those odds, even with your MRAP? But at any rate...
an MRAP's useless anyway.
I mean, this is what it's going to come down to, man. You're going to have 30 guys with guns versus one MRAP. The MRAP's toast, and the four idiots inside are toast. And this is going to be repeated over and over and over again. And all these people you're letting in that you think are hardcore Democrats and are going to buy into a globalist regime, they're not. They're Mexicans. They're Hondurans. They're El Salvadorians. They're from places that are way worse than here, and they hate government. So your plan's going to backfire a million times over, and this is why it's even more pathetic.
Yeah, man, I really think that, first of all, a lot of my, I hang out with and grew up with a lot of people that were immigrants and stuff, and I still hang out and work with a lot of immigrants and stuff. And one thing I know from a lot of my friends is that on this anti-establishment stuff, most of them are on the same page. And these people are refugees that are fleeing bad government. You think they're coming here to try to get more bad government? That's an idiotic assertion, actually. Anybody that thinks that is pretty, I mean, it's so against everything that they're leaving their own countries for, is that they're not going to stand for bad government. And the people that are immigrating here right now are definitely our allies, and it should be encouraged to allow refugees in, people that are fleeing situations that, guess who made? The U.S. with our horrible foreign policy down in Central America. And Mexico. I mean, our foreign policy in Mexico is probably one of the worst. We have very, very close ties with their government. Whenever they talk about legalizing drugs to actually stem this problem, this violence problem that they have down there, the U.S. government steps in and they say, oh, you want to legalize drugs? Well, there goes your billions in aid.
Right.
That you're not going to, your military, and you're not going to get none of that.
Right.
Not only that, but the cartels don't want legalization.
No.
You think the cartels want legalization? It would destroy the cartel. So you got the cartels and the U.S. government basically working on the same side to sway the Mexican government not to legalize drugs. So these people are definitely fleeing bad government, bad foreign policy. You think they're going to go up there and then vote to send troops into El Salvador? No. They know how bad that turned out the first time.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So, these are the kind of things that we got to think about a little different.
Don't let a tyrannical government claim you as a casualty of a war on your conscience, okay? Put your shoe on the other foot and imagine what it would be like.
Right there. Yo, here we go through the stereo.